When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
It's Nick and Neil's Summer Millwall History Show.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Neil and Nick's Summer History Shows. If you mention the name Millwall Football Club, there's only one address that springs to mind for any fan of a certain vintage, of which I am one. Listeners, that's Coldblow Lane, Lucross, London, SE14. Joining me to discuss the quite traumatic move, really, looking back from the Isle of Dogs, where we were founded, is my co-pilot on these shows, Mr. Neil Fissler. Welcome to the show, Neil.
Hello, Nick. How you going, mate?
Good, mate. Yeah. I think sometimes we take for granted the fact that we were a New Cross club. Obviously, the club was founded on the Isle of Dogs. We've mentioned in previous shows the origins of the club in the very industrial, the Mill Docks and the West India Docks. But there was a pressing move in 1910. Obviously, the club had a fairly shiftless existence. This would be the fourth ground move in 25 years since the club was founded in 1885. But I think there was a drive and a need and a recognition, Neil, by the end of the 1910 decade, the opening years of the 20th century, that the Isle of Dogs couldn't support an ambitious football club like Millwall FC. And there was a need to move and find new sources of support, a move that would take us to Coldblow Lane in the end.
Yeah, I think that we'd probably outgrown where we were, heavily industrialised, and we couldn't attract the crowds anymore, and support dwindled to 3,000.
Quite a difficult ground to get to, I believe, as well. I mean, when you read the James Murray book, not easy to get to.
No, I think they put on they tried buses from Poplar.
Yeah.
There was obviously the train and things like that. But I think there was a sense, I think it was split, as we've said in others, that the driving force behind this move was Tom Thorne.
An ambitious man, yeah.
Very ambitious man. James Skegg, who was actually the town hall clerk at Poplar, one of the Millwall founders, one of the biggest shareholders. He'd made Millwall one of the best run clubs in the country. And he desperately wanted to keep Millwall on the island, but there was just nowhere for us to go. So he tasked Tom Thorne with finding us somewhere. And that move, that search started in the early as 1909. So it took us a long time, and Tom Thornton came up on this idea of to move south of the river.
Yeah.
And it was highly populated. It was more densely populated.
On top of the Surrey docks, and was accessible to some level, Neil, from the island, because they had a football tunnel. I think many fans did. There was a split in the fan base. When you read through the Lines of the South book, which is the authoritative work in many respects on this period, many fans were split between the idea of crossing the river, because foreign listeners might not know, but in London, the River Thames is a huge psychological divide, and crossing from north to south, east to west, is a big deal. It still is.
It still is. I think many modern-day Millwall fans actually forget the club actually...
north of the river,
North of the river, in Bandit.
Absolutely. And the other thing I just want to say, just seeing James Skeggs' name, just interrupting, Neil, in these early days of football, and you see this across many football clubs across the whole country, to have a football club in your town, in your city, or in many cases your town, was seen as a real attribute. It was seen as, they were representing your locality. So James Skeggs, as this one of the early shareholders, was also linked in as a clerk at Poplar Council. It would have been a real wrench for that local council to lose its football club. It was seen as something to have and a kind of a method of keeping your name out there, you know. So to lose it to south of the river would have been seen as a real loss at the time.
Yeah, it's probably the equivalent of Wimbledon moving to Milton Keynes. Well, without the hysterics and obviously
everything. the razzmatazz of that. I mean, the Thorne family. I mean, we've mentioned them on previous shows. Tom Thorne in particular. We've already said it. We'll say it again. He was an ambitious man. I think he saw the potential of Millwall Football Club accessing the bigger population centres of New Cross, the Surrey Docks, Bermondsey, and points southwards. And I think that was seen as very much seen as the way forward for the future of Millwall Football Club south of the river.
There were no football clubs. There was Plumstead or the Woolwich Arsenal, was there?
No Cholton.
They were. There was no. Yeah, but there are no spotters. There was certainly no competition then. Definitely no competition now. But there was nothing in between. In between us and Plumstead, it just goes. Charlton have always lived in Millwall's shadow and always will live in Millwall's shadow. And then there was outfit further south to Croydon.
Yes,
and
yes.
And there was this great expanse in between.
It was a shrewdly chosen location, wasn't it? I mean, a very shrewdly chosen location. I mean, when you look at the site, one of the strange things about the old den, which you only really see when you look at maps of that era, just after Tom Thorne eventually settled on the Coldblow Lane site, after a series of, I think they looked at the back of the Rose Inn, which is at New Cross Gates from reading through the lines of the south. And I think a place in Deptford, but they settled on what was a market garden site on Coldblow Lane, but hemmed in by railway lines, Neil. It was defined by the railway lines, like a triangle of a railway line that dictated how it could be laid out.
Yeah, and it was actually ground that was secured from the London, Brighton and South West Railway Company. Yeah. But I think importantly, we got a 21-year lease on it.
Yeah.
And this enabled us to put down some pretty serious roots in the area. Every other ground we had on 2, 3, 4, 5 year leases.
Shiftless. Yeah.
So it was the case of every time something happened, we had to move or we outgrew somewhere. But this was a big parcel of land. When you look at it, there are certainly older people who remember, and the younger generation, that if you ever look on the most inappropriate a parcel of land in football, Jews Hill, yes, and you look down on the old ground, but behind you, that big bowl was actually a Speedway stadium, a Greyhound track.
Famous one, New Cross Speedway.
Cross Stadium. So there was a tremendous amount of land down there. Develop and it was our own. I know it was a 21-year lease, and I think we eventually ended up buying it. But incidentally, if the railway company wanted the land, they had to compensate us. Before we were just turfed out and away you go. And I think the Millwall docks thought they were doing us a favour when we could store stuff there until we could find somewhere else. But this was home. This was our own. This was something that we could develop. And
it would go on to become synonymous. I mean, Coldblow Lane and Millwall go together like steak and kidney, bacon and eggs. They flow off of the tongue. For anyone of a certain age, listeners, of which, as we keep saying, we are. But it was a relatively big ground. I mean, some of the grounds on the Isle of Dogs were quite limited in capacity. And average crowds there weren't huge. I mean, 3,000 to 5,000 per game, which generated the need to move. But the den, Cobbler Lane, was intended to be a 36,000 capacity ground nil. But it would actually, I mean, in the end, I think the official capacity when I first started was a 45,000, I think. I don't know how you'd ever get 40,000 people in it, I don't know, but it was just a bigger...
Mate, that's how.
it was a bigger capacity facility, and I think it enabled the club to think bigger, which I think was the key reason behind the move away from the Isle of Dogs. I love some of these. I mean, the details when we came to move Neil. I mean, obviously it was a market garden. We settled on this site at Coldwell Lane, but I love the advert that you've listed here. The club put out that contractors could dump their rubbish there. I suppose that's to build up terracing to give you a banking, you know, for concrete terracing later.
Yeah, well, basically this would have been flatland. There'd have been no banking, no terracing, and you needed four sides. So for the princely sum of £2.10, you could buy a book of 100 tickets, which enabled you to dump your rubbish.
Great stuff. Isn't it? Yeah. That's how you build a stadium.
You were quite entrepreneurial if you think about it, that we needed a ground built, so we actually
So we actually
advertised that people could come and dump their rubbish, their hardcore and whatever else, and that we'd build a football ground out of all your rubbish. It was a modern... Yeah, well, I know one of the new World Cup stadiums, it's recycled materials. Yeah, well, so was the old then.
I love this quote. I'm going to come back to the last game on the North Greenwich, if I may, Neil. I'm going to finish this show with this little bit, if I may. So I'll come back to that. But I love this quote about the new den, the den, I should call it, the new at the time den, from the Athletic News, that it's reachable from all four quarters of the globe. That's quite a claim. who says modern journalism is you know, goes too far? I mean, that's quite a leap. We're no longer amongst the docks, the Athletic News says. We are broaching a new centre of population for modern enclosure. I think it was seen as a real step forward. I mean, in fact, we were credited with an international game, the England versus Wales game after opening. So it was seen as quite a feat that we were achieving here at the time.
Yeah, and it was a brand new big ground, and it had all the accommodation. They don't call it terracing and stands. It's accommodation. But I think Elijah Moore had got the pitch ready quite quickly, but obviously you build it up, so there were problems. So we actually started the season back at North Greenwich.
Yeah, the old ground. Yeah.
So we haven't quite migrated. Yeah, but the reason given was the new stand wasn't ready.
Building a stadium is never an easy, straightforward thing. Just ask West Ham about that. Get someone else to do it for you.
Levy decided to change the plan. They had to go through a whole set of new planning permission. But with this new ground, I didn't realise this, but I was reading when I was researching this, the new ground contained reading, billiard, players' rooms will be provided, as well as by a supper.
That's wonderful.
By a supper.
I'd love to know where the billiard table was. I mean, I only ever went in that exec lounge once at the old den. I didn't see a billiard table in there, but who knows, you know, who knows?
A concert room, I think, was in there as well. So
Concert room? I mean, I never saw
a concert room. This is what people listen to our podcast, Nick, because they will now be scratching their heads wondering.
There must have been a piano in there for recitals and the like, you know.
A billiard room. And a reading room.
I mean, we've mentioned Tom Fong's name. But he's an ambitious man. He wants the best for Millwall Football Club. And I think the move from the Isle of Dogs was seen as raising our standards. And it's quite interesting. You mentioned the reading room, a billiard table, concert hall, and various facilities like that, because that would have been seen as aspirational, moving up in the world. We are a working class club, but there's no reason why, just because you're working class, you can't aim for higher in life. And I think there was a bit of a sense of that, Neil. This was moving upwards. This was going to be a big club, an Arsenal, as it will become in time.
Yeah, we had ambition, didn't we, back then? Yeah. We had ambition right up until World War II. That's not to say we haven't got ambition now, but we were one of the biggest clubs in the country. We're certainly one of the biggest clubs in London. Arguably, we were bigger than Tottenham at the time. And really, there was only the Arsenal, which would have pushed us. But the club was forward-thinking. It was ambitious. And getting Archibald Leitch, the great footballer.
Famous name. Yeah.
And, yeah, but I know we've done shows on legends, but as football legends go, Archibald Leitch is right up there with the biggest names. He designed grounds. Virtually every ground in the country was an Archibald Leitch.
Leitch stands were legendary, weren't they? Archibald Leitch was an architect, listeners, who specialised in football stadium construction. And you are talking about
examples that are still around. The outside of the stands at Highbury, I know they've been turned into flats.
Yeah, they're still there. They're listed, aren't they? Yep. So you can't say.
Plymouth Argyle, the grandstand is Archibald Leitch. Even though he died by then, I think it was Leitch's plans. But examples, the main stand at Goodison Park.
There's an Archibald. And Ibrox Park.
I think those are the only examples that are left. I could be wrong.
But I think you're right. I know that Roker Park was an Archibald Leitch, but of course that's gone. And I think as time has passed, listeners, the Leitch, the classics. The outside, the exterior of Highbury was seen as a bold. This is brash, big, bold, new sport. This was
I think is a good word. I know we used to. In another
captured the imagination of the people, and this was accommodation, the word we've got here, that would that would capture that. So I think it's interesting to see the aim. I think Millwall Football Club, Neil, at various points, including this under Tom Thorne, but other points in the years to come, we were never short of ambition, but we've also been very unfortunate in meeting disaster. Triumph and disaster go hand in hand at Millwall, don't they? And I think that's knocked us back, whether it be war or riot or whatever you want to call it. We face triumph and disaster hand in hand. I think that's held us back at times. But we've never wanted for ambition. I include Reg Burr, actually, in some of it. He relaunched us in the 80s.
We're moving to the new brand was ambition. Because we couldn't redevelop the den,
We
had to move.
Yeah.
And I know he promised us all sorts. But he was a visionary. He was pretty much like the Thorns and...
That was the new den, our den now, listeners, was the first brand new ground in London since this era. I think since Highbury was built shortly after Coldblow Lane would be constructed. But, I mean, just on the point of ambition, that was ambition. It led us to disaster in a sense that we would finish up in administration. But we've never wanted for ambition. And I think it's to our club's credit that we've never... the disaster has come along, but we've always responded with an ambitious reply at various crucial points in our history. And that includes this move to Coldblow Lane, because it must have been traumatic. I was just reading about this. Mr. Skeggs, the town clerk of Poplar, major shareholder. Neil, your note here says he declared he never wanted to be concerned in another such undertaking. It must have been traumatic at the time.
Especially a second big move in... 8-9 years.
Because
we'd obviously moved to North Greenwich and everything that was involved there.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we're going through it again. Less than a decade later. You could imagine he was probably worn down by this. This wasn't his job.
He was a town clerk. He was there to clean the bins and keep the gas lights going and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, this was just for kudos in society. It was back then. He was involved with Millwall Football Club. And I can imagine search was a difficult search because you have to try and find the ground. I don't know how they did it. Did they go down there?
I think it was done in some secrecy. I think they didn't want to alert the commercial opponents. I don't know who that might have been, but I think it was done in some secrecy. I think price was a factor. I don't think they wanted to alert any prospective sellers of land, and then value would go up, obviously.
Yeah, so but I think it was done £1,000, which was a considerable sum of money back then.
Yeah, and Elijah Moore was involved in the construction of the new den and certainly the laying out of the pitch. Tom Thorne, as a builder, oversaw the construction aspects of the new ground.
Yeah, it was built by a company from Knightsbridge. So Tom Thorne's company
subbed that out. Yeah.
Didn't actually build the ground, but he would have been heavily involved.
Absolutely, in
getting them involved. I guess he was a house builder and he needed something a little bit more than that.
There's a lovely, and if you'll forgive me, Neil and listeners, just to close this episode, there's a lovely few paragraphs. So I'm going to forgive me for reading this out. This is from James Murray's masterwork, The Lions of the South. It just concerns the final game at North Greenwich, this emotional leaving of the island, which I think just it sums up the kind of sentimental aspect of Millwall Football Club and the ambition side of it. For every ambition, there's always a slight sense of loss. And I think these words, if you'll forgive me, Neil, I just want to read them out because I think they really do capture something. We're talking about the final game at North Greenwich, which was a delayed exit. There was a series of final games because the new ground wasn't ready. But I'm going to read now. It says, when the final whistle blew, the Millwall players waved to the cheering crowd and said their goodbyes. Millwall were leaving the island, while the island in turn had lost a friend, an industry, a recreation and a vital part of its lifeblood. No longer would the Saturday afternoon crowd pop into Uncle Tom's cabin on British Street for a packet of Woodbines and a cup of tea on the way to the match. Or if they fancied the harder stuff, some Bass or Worthington, best bitter at the Lord Nelson. Or maybe Taylor Walker's at the Manchester Arms in Cubitt Town. Some might have chopped at Elijah Moore's toilet club, which would have been a toilet club, a strange expression, like a barber's for a shave. As bad as the ground was, North Greenwich, its very ugliness helped build a legend. It was well known that even if the uncompromising Mill defenders and the mighty Tiny Joyce didn't put off opposing attackers, then the young supporters sitting behind a goal, throwing handfuls of sand into their faces would. I just think that's lovely. This captures me all. A bit tosser. That's 1910. The ugliness of the ground. There's something, everything changes, yet nothing changes, listeners. That's, I just thought, was beautiful words by James Murray. And I think it summed up the move, the ambitious move from North Greenwich to New Cross to Coldblow Lane. Neil, thank you, mate. I've enjoyed that episode. That was a good one.
Thank you very much indeed. Yeah, I hope everybody enjoys these. And if anybody's got any ideas of anything that we haven't covered that you would like us to cover, get in touch. The email address is in the description below. And you can hit us both up on social media, me at Neil Fizzler and him at Acton Millwall.
Acton Millwall, absolutely. Be lovely to hear from you, and suggestions are welcome. We'll do our best to research and come up with some of the stories, names and personalities behind our wonderful history. Thank you for listening, dear listeners.
It's Nick and Neil's Summer Millwall History Show.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.